In honor of the 6th yard site of Devorah Plow, we will be speaking about a world that her neshama lives in right now, but that we can only learn about and think about. And remember that everything we discuss only the words. We discuss only in the abstract, because truly what we speak about is experiential, and we hope not to experience these things for a long time. But know that when we speak about the next world, which is really at the core of our talk of Oneg Shabbos, Kavod Shabbos, and Kedusha Shabbos, we are like blind men describing to a class of student drivers exactly what you do at a red light, a yellow light, and a green light. We can explain it perfectly, but there's only one problem. We don't know what the color red really looks like, or yellow or green. That's our position. In discussing those three concepts, Kavod Shabbos, Oneg Shabbos, and Kedusha Shabbos, we begin with questioning what those terms mean. Often and mistakenly, they're used interchangeably. You will see people tasting something delicious at a Suda Shabbos and say, Kavod Shabbos. That's a mistake, actually. Talking about Kedusha Shabbos in the things we do to make Shabbos special, like in the Suda or the clothing, that's a mistake. Talking about Oneg Shabbos in areas where Oneg doesn't apply. And so our first job is to define those terms carefully. In order to define the terms, we go back to the first psukim that tell us about the creation of Shabbos and ask some most simple and obvious questions. And then we begin to understand the answers through the discussion of the very popular notion of a neshama yesera. That concept of neshama yesera will be actually our key to understanding the concepts of Kavod, Oneg, and Kedusha, and the questions we're going to ask in the Pesukim. So the Pasuk says in Perek Beis, I'm sorry, the end of Perek Aleph, Vayachulu Hashamayim v'ha'aretz v'chol tzva'am. Everything was, now we normally translate this as finished, but it's not, the shorish here is not gamar. And so our first question is, what truly is the shorish of Vayachulu? What does the word Vayachulu mean? Here in the English, they are careful not to say that everything was finished. It says everything was brought to its intended completion, which already has other connotations. What does Vayachulu mean? That's question number one. What's the shorish of the word? Again, we find the word Vayachal Elokim Vayom Hashvi Malachto Asher Asa. Second question. When did Hashem finish his malacha? Vayachal Elokim Bayom Hashvi'i Melachto Asher Asai. The Pasuk says openly, Hashem finished on the seventh day. That means he did something and finished on the seventh day. There was a Bria on the seventh day. And that was the last Bria. And then Hashem was Vayachulu, whatever that means, Vayachal, which we'll speak about. Vayishbos Bayom Hashvi'i. So two things happened on the seventh day. There's no mention of the sixth day here. There's two things that took place on the seventh day. Hashem did something called Vayachulu, and then Hashem did something called Vayishvos. Both things happened on the seventh. Hashem blessed Vayivarach Elokim Es Yom Hashvi Vayikadesh. So Hashem was blessed it and was Mekadesh it. So what does the word Bracha mean? And what does the word Kedusha mean? So Rashi tells us, the Bracha was in that the man fell doubly on Erev Shabbos, and the Kedusha was in that no man fell on Shabbos. This is critical. This will help us understand the uniqueness of Shabbos, the concept of Kedusha. Why did Hashem make no man fall on Shabbos? Kivo Shavas, because that is the day that Hashem was engaged in Shvisa. Mikol Malachto Asher Bara Elokim Lasos, from all the work that he had created to do. Now, our question is, what is Vayachulu? what is the act of Vayechulu, what is the act of Vayishvos, what is the act of Vayekadesh. Now, we normally think that when it says Hashem completed everything, so he completed, this is the normal way it's understood, the work of the 6 days of creation. He was done with it. But the simple problem is that the work of the 6 days of creation is very much the same on Shabbos as it is every other day of the week. It continues, and we say daily in davening, Machadesh b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh bereishis. Hashem continuously reworks the whole Bria, brings it into existence on a regular basis, on a day-by-day, moment-by-moment basis. And therefore, Hashem is recreating the world every day, including Shabbos. So what changed on Shabbos? Where is the so-called finishing and resting that we normally think about? The Bria continues. There's only one thing we know about that actually stopped on Shabbos, and that's the Mun. That's the only experience we ever had of something that actually came to an end because it was Shabbos. But the Mun is not even part of the Bria. It's Lechem min Hashamayim, it's Lamala min Hateva, and that's what comes to an end truly on the seventh day, and everything else that is part of the 6 days does definitely not come to an end on the seventh day. So what does the act of Vayishvos mean, and what does the act of Vayichal mean? Our next question is, and this will help us answer those questions, what is the Neshama Yisera, and is there a source for it in the Psukim? Is there some type of hint to it? So Rav Huttner in Shabbos says that every Bria, everything that's part of the Bria, has a purpose. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us eyes, that means that they're an apparatus we have so we can see the all of the colors that exist out there and the textures, all of the things that Hashem created. And you, now, there are sounds, but if we have no ears, we can't hear them. There are smells, if we have no nose, we can't smell them. So you need a keli, a kli kibul, a receptive faculty, in order to receive what exists. So every part of our creation is a makabel. Everything we are built with receives in some degree. That's why we have it. That's why we need it. So when Hashem gave us an Neshama Yisera, Hashem gives us no creation, no part of our existence that has no purpose. It is also a Kli Kibul. That's the first most important principle. The Neshama Yisera that we are given on Shabbos is a Kli that is Mekabel something. Now the reason we're given it, actually we're given it Erev Shabbos, the reason we're given the Kli Kibul Erev Shabbos because something is being released on Shabbos, and if we have no Kli Kibul, then we can't take advantage of it. So Hashem prepares us, this is Hachana, preparation, by giving us a Neshama Yisera, which becomes a Kli Kibul, for then what we can receive only on Shabbos. So what is it that we receive only on Shabbos? Well, the answer to that is the answer to the question of what was created on Shabbos. What is Vayechal? Vayechulu. Now, as we know, we have already mentioned the shorish of that word. Vayechulu, the shorish is keli, kli. Hashem created the reality that everything he had previously created, and including what he would create on Shabbos, would be a keli. It would be somehow used to fulfill our purpose here, to receive what Hashem has given us, and to do with it what Hashem wants us to do with it. The entire Bria is a Keli. The entire world has a purpose, and the purpose is Vayechulu, to be a Kli Kibul. Vayechulu Hashemayim Va'aretz, just like the word Keli, we have the beginning of something is the Chalos of something, when something starts out to begin to fulfill its purpose. A Kala, You can understand that yourself. The ultimate Kli Kibul, Kala. Vayechulu Hashemayim Va'aretz. The entire Shemayim and Aretz and all of the parts of it are in the category of a Keli. They are in the category of Vayechulu. But more, there's something else. Vayechal, one more thing. Vayechulu is plural. Vayechal Elokim Vayom Hashvi'i. On Yom Hashvi'i, something else was brought into the Bria. And it is the greatest Kli Kibul of all, it allows us to receive, and it is, this is the remez to the neshama yisera. There is a keli that we're given so that we can appreciate what Hashem created on the seventh day, and what Hashem created on the seventh day is vayishbos, the concept of shvisa. Now remember, Hashem doesn't sweat and get tired, so He rests. So when we say vayishbos, Hashem is doing nothing different. We, it's a term of understanding for us. When we say Hashem is resting, that's something that changes in us. Nothing ever changes in Hashem. Just like when we say Hashem is speaking, Hashem is crying, nothing's changing in Hashem. It's only changing in our understanding. So when we say Hashem rested, something about us is changing. So we first established that there's an neshama yisera, a classical idea, and it's part of Vayechulu, and it's specifically created for the purpose of Shabbos. And what we receive on Shabbos that is altogether different from the rest of the week is called Vayishvos. Let's go back to the neshama yisera. The neshama yisera is here to be makabel what? It's to be makabel the experience of Shabbos. So before we explain Vayishvos, let's talk in more terms that we're more familiar with. Shabbos is associated with Oneg. Shabbos is associated with Oneg. Kavod Shabbos is not associated with Shabbos itself. Kavod Shabbos, as Rambam points out, is exclusively associated with Friday. All the halachas of preparation for Shabbos that Rambam lists in Hilchos Shabbos all fall under the category of Kavod Shabbos. Here is Rambam's words. How does one honor the Shabbos? Our sages explain that one takes a warm bath on Friday in honor of Shabbos. I'm just reading bits and pieces. One sits in a reverent mood waiting for the arrival of Shabbos as one awaits the greeting of a king. In order to honor Shabbos, one wears clean clothes. Ezra decreed that people launder their clothes on Thursday to honor Shabbos. One should set the table on Friday. One must tidy up the house on Friday. Even if a person is very distinguished, they should do chores on Friday to prepare for Shabbos. The more tasks one performs in honor of Shabbos, the more praiseworthy he is. This is some of the examples of Kavod Shabbos, but if you look in Hilchos Shabbos, everything the Rambam points out is a preparatory act on Friday. And much of what we prepare on Shabbos is for the food of Shabbos, but also the house, all our surroundings, the entire atmosphere. There is a special mitzvah. It is praiseworthy, even for a person who never bothers themselves with housekeeping chores, to work and prepare for Shabbos. Kavod Shabbos is exclusively associated with Hachana, preparation for Shabbos Friday. However, the experience of enjoying Shabbos, Oneg Shabbos, is only on Shabbos, and according to Rambam, is 95% associated with Besuda of Shabbos. Also, relations between a man and a wife, which is Tanug, Oneg is associated with Shabbos, but primarily Rambam spends a lot of time here describing how a person must be very careful about preparing a special, lavish, honorable meal for Shabbos, spend extra money on Shabbos, eat different food, eat at different times, eat three meals. To delight in Shabbos, one should eat meat and drink wine, provided one can afford it. Do not travel on Friday because you might not be in time for the Suda, in time to prepare and have the Suda ready. So that's about Oneg Shabbos. Marital relations are part of Oneg Shabbos. And so our question is, Kavod Shabbos is Hachana. Oneg Shabbos is about the food and the Suda on Shabbos itself. And Rambam goes into quite a bit of detail about how to make the meal special. He says you must set your table and set beautiful foods to the best of your abilities on Shabbos. Even if you eat no more than a kazayas, you should prepare delicious foods, and even if small amounts, but it should be special, and it should be beyond what you normally do. So if Shabbos is about Oneg, and Shabbos is about food, how do those two relate to each other? Well, another word for oneg, another word for oneg, or another word for the experience of Shabbos is schar. The word oneg and the word schar are really synonymous. When we talk about schar, what do we mean? So firstly, and most importantly, we don't mean bracha. Rambam makes that very clear in Hilchos Tshuva. Bracha is something we experience in this world. And it comes under certain conditions. If you listen to my Im B'chukos HaTelech, if you listen to my mitzvot, Hashem promises us the rain will fall and your crops will grow and no enemies will attack you and there'll be no poverty. Everybody will be healthy. That's called bracha, and we experience it in this world if we do the mitzvot, as Rambam says, with simcha, properly. Then you get bracha in this world. And he explains that the bracha is only here to enable you to do more mitzvot and learn more Torah without distraction. However, if you don't deserve the bracha, you end up living a very distracted life, and therefore you can't do more, you're hindered from doing mitzvot and learning more Torah. So it builds on itself. We create our destiny for this world. But that's not schar, because schar is schar b'hai al malecha. There's no such thing as schar in this world, and the reason there's no such thing as schar in this world is because all the things that Hashem gives us in the form of bracha, food and temperature and climate and crops and peace, those are things we can appreciate with our physical bodies. But we have no kli kibul for schar at all. We have no way to appreciate schar, and therefore it's not given to us in this world. My grandfather used to explain schar in a small way like this. It says you're drowning in the middle of the ocean and your life is about to be lost, and somebody sees you and they put their own life at risk and they come out to save you, and they do save you. They save your life, and you go to visit them and you say, "How can I thank you? You saved my life. Here, let me give you a piece of gum." There is no way to reward a person in this world for the mitzvahs they do, to give a person schar. We have no way to accept, to receive what is schar. Because schar has no relationship to the physical body. The reason it has no relationship to the physical body is because it comes from the future world, another world, and that world has no physical components to it. There is no physicality in the Olam Ha'emes. There's no bodies, as Rambam says, and there's no eating, and there's no drinking, and there's no bodies, and there's no women, like Rambam calls the stupid Arabs, Arabim Atipshim, who believe in the women and the wine. There's nothing physical at all in the next world, as he clearly states in Hilchos Tshuva, right here. He says, the good that is stored for the righteous is life in the world to come, and I'm reading in the English and the Hebrew. There's another word that we plug in here besides schar, which is oneg. The real proper Torah usage of the word tov is also the same. The word tov always is associated with schar and with oneg. These words are all in a group. They're, in a sense, synonyms. So the good, the tov that is associated, the tov that is stored for the righteous is tov that is not linked to any bad and not linked to any death. It is a world which is infinitely long, the world to come. And he says here, there is no physical bodies in the world to come, only the souls of the tzaddikim. There are no physical bodies, there's neither eating or drinking or any bodily function, sitting, standing, sleeping, death, sadness, laughter. The sages said the world to come, there's no eating, drinking, sexual relations, but the righteous sit with their crowns on their heads, nehne, and they are nehne miziv hashchina. So when we speak about schar, or oneg, or tov, we're talking about an entirely non-physical experience, so therefore it's not able to be received in this world, and therefore it doesn't come to us in this world. What is the non-physical experience? Well, it's considered, it's spoken of in words that are physical. The tzaddikim are sitting at a huge suda, and the suda is of the most unimaginable kinds of delicacies, including the livyasan. Right, these are all image. This is imagery. These are mashalim. There is no suda. So we speak about the concept of eating because Oneg Shabbos is about the meals on Shabbos. The concept of eating. So we live with this annoying dynamic that we all have to contend with, which is hunger, satisfaction. hunger, satisfaction. Once you're satisfied, you think you're set. You're not set. 3-4 hours pass, the whole rigmarole starts again. And a huge amount of time and energy is devoted to this endless hunger, satisfaction cycle. What's the point of it? So everything in this world is a keli, including that type of dynamic that we live with. What is the point of hunger and satisfaction? So in this world, in the physical world, we hunger for food, and food satisfies us temporarily. But in the world that is not physical, we are also very hungry. Now, we have non-physical components to our life, our intellect, our emotion. Those are non-physical. We are intellectually hungry. We are emotionally hungry. We are always, you might say, starving. If you're thinking, you're starving intellectually and emotionally. The starvation begins to set in at a very young age. 5 years old, it starts already. How did Hashem get here? Who made Hashem? What happened before Hashem made the world? What was going on? What was Hashem doing before that? Why can't we see Hashem? Why does Hashem conduct the world in this incomprehensible way? And then come the more complicated answers, the more complicated questions, the chukim, the story of Jewish history, Tzadik V'Ralo, Rasha V'Tovlo, how much longer does it have to go? What does Hashem really want? All the different ways that we practice our Judaism, the different minhagim, which is the right one? What about the halachas that's come through the ages? What's the real way? So many questions. There are no answers to our questions. There is no answer to how Hashem got here in Tzadik V'Ralo. We only hunger. We never get satisfied. And even Moshe hungered and had no, and there was no answers for him. No satisfaction for his questions at Tzadik V'Ralo. Now, we live with this hunger. We also are hungry emotionally. We love Hashem, but we can't see Hashem. We can't feel Hashem. We feel distant sometimes. We feel separated. We work with unsatisfied emotions and unsatisfied questions. And that is why human beings, by the way, are the only creature alive that experiences the emotion of dissatisfaction. Because in order to be dissatisfied, you have to know that there is something better. Like, there's answers. There's truth. There's immortality. And then I'm dissatisfied that I'm mortal. Every single human being truly is dissatisfied that we die. Nobody's happy. Nobody embraces it with enthusiasm. We're dissatisfied. We reject it. It's a violation of what we want. But if we know nothing of immortality, we would not be dissatisfied by being mortal. Animals do not walk around dissatisfied. Dissatisfaction only can exist if you can compare my lot to something more perfect. Now I'm dissatisfied. But an animal doesn't compare. If they would compare their lot to our lot, if they had the ability to compare, they would have the ability to improve, and they wouldn't be doing the same thing they've been doing for all of creation. They'd have built some more tools and built themselves houses and improved their lot like we have, because we compared. So we are dissatisfied partially because we are starving and we don't have answers. And there are no answers in this world. However, the next world is all about the answers. It's the Suda. Now, it's not a physical Suda, obviously. But the food that satisfies our hunger in the next world is what we call Das. It's knowledge. It's understanding. It's not Seichel and Bina and Chachma. Those are forms of learning, types of learning abilities. Styles of learning information. Das is not a style of learning. Das is a state of being where the answers are evident and obvious and everything makes sense. And nobody has to explain anything because the answers are all around and everything, all the puzzle pieces fit together and a person breathes a sigh of relief and the whole thing is clear. That's called Das. The Suda of the next world of the Livyasan is Das. The experience of eating in the next world is Das. It's when the blind man finally gets to see the color red and green and yellow that he's been talking about for so long. It's when we have been speaking about that everything is chesed, that even though we see tzaddik v'ralo and rasha v'tovlo, it doesn't mean anything. Hashem is malei chesed and everything has a purpose. Then we get it. We understand it. All of what we've been talking about, without knowing what we've been talking about, all of a sudden makes sense, and we say, oh, of course, this is what we've always talked about, we've always known it, we just didn't experience it, and now we experience it. That's das. That is associated with food. The concepts are one is the mashal, one is the nimshal. So, what Hashem gives us on Shabbos, and we begin to explain what vayishbos means, and try to understand their question, how come man, which is lechem in Hashemayim, is the only creation that actually stopped on the seventh day, and it's not part of the Teva? And we always think that what Hashem stopped is the Teva, but Hashem never stopped the Teva on the seventh day. What is Vayishbos? When we speak about what Hashem created on the seventh day, is Hashem created Tzchar. Now, this is confusing, because Rav Hunter points out that our problem is that when we use a word in Hebrew, such as Tzchar, we automatically think of the English mundane definitions of the word. So, the concept of reward, the way we think about it, has nothing to do with schar. The way we think about reward is like this. Two things. Number one, any object which exists independently, such as a book, a sefer, you know, a piece of jewelry, clothing, or food, or camera, anything, it exists. It has many uses. One day, somebody says, I will take this camera, and it will be your reward if you do A, B, and C. So that object can be designated as a reward, but, and you know, when somebody decides to designate it. Otherwise, when it's not designated as a reward, it still has its own existence, its own use. It still exists separately. Also, it has to be earned. Until the person earns that reward, that camera remains unconnected to them and is not called reward. It becomes a reward when it's earned. So schar, our schar that we speak about the next world and all of the das and the satisfaction and the joy and the happiness that comes with the das, which we will speak about further, that does not exist in any other form. It has no other use, and most importantly, no one has to work in order to create it. You don't work to create schar. In other words, you work to turn that camera into a reward. You don't work to create any schar. Schar exists. It is the reunion that a neshama gets to have with its shoresh, with its source. And in that reunion, when the neshama returns to the shoresh that created it, and Hashem says two words, Ani Hashem, and like the brothers in front of Yosef, when he said those two words, he didn't have to say anything else, and all their questions instantly vaporized, and everything made sense. Why does he bother us so much? How does he know how old we are? Why did he put Shimon in jail when Shimon is the one that threw Yosef in jail? How did his children have power to overcome Shimon, who was the strongest of all the brothers? Oh, they had so many questions. All of a sudden it made sense. Their experience, unfortunately, Kliyakar explains, that's more like Gehenna, because they were humiliated and it was a terrible experience to hear Ani Hashem. But when Ani Yosef. But when a neshama who's been speaking and searching and davening and doing mitzvahs and giving tzedakah and chesed and everything hears Ani Hashem, that neshama says, of course, I've been speaking about you all the time. I just didn't understand. I know this. I've been searching. I've been looking. And in that reunion between Hashem and the neshama is ultimate bliss and ultimate joy, and it's forever. And it's not our subject tonight to go into depth in that area, but we did once spend, in honor of a yard site, a whole class discussing just this, that experience. But that experience of schar, of oneg, of tov, is reserved for the neshama on its return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And a person does not, that schar has no other use. That schar, that privilege, that bracha that the neshama gets, that it gets to be reunited, to come back to the Shechina, that schar exists automatically and it's accessible, it's available to every neshama on earth. It's not as if the neshama must do something in order to create it. It exists without anybody doing anything. The only thing the neshama has to do is make sure they can access it. But it's created. And it is nothing else but schar, which is das. And as you see now, obviously, schar b'hayal malecha, you cannot have such schar in this world. Because then we would know everything. We would have no bechira. It's an entirely intellectual, psychological, emotional schar. We can no way receive it here. And it's reserved there. But we always think that our mitzvahs create schar. It's not true at all. The Beis HaLevi says, schar mitzvah mitzvah doesn't mean that the reward of doing a mitzvah is the opportunity to do another mitzvah. He says that Hashem has schar, it's a bria. And all Hashem wants to do is allow the neshama's returning to get some of it, to receive it, to be welcomed into it. But Hashem created a system where we only can be welcomed into the world of schar if we've done some mitzvahs. So schar mitzvah mitzvah, which means to say, to allow Hashem to give us the schar of a mitzvah, to allow Hashem to give us schar, that's a mitzvah. We do a mitzvah, so to speak, to God. By allowing Hashem to give us schar, when we do a mitzvah and we thereby allow Hashem to release to us the schar, or let us rather, let's say this is better imagery, bring us into the place of schar, that's a mitzvah. We've just done a mitzvah on behalf for Hashem's benefit, so to speak. We've made Hashem happy. That the schar exists. The point of the Suda on Shabbos, of Oneg Shabbos, it's called Oneg, schar, tov, it's all in the same category. The point of the Suda on Shabbos is Oneg. It's to have for once a little glimpse, an experience of being satisfied, our hunger being satisfied. But when we eat the food, we are meant to get beyond the physical hunger and the physical satisfaction and imagine for a moment that this satisfaction of this Suda Shabbos should feel to us like the satisfaction of having all of our unanswerable questions answered. My grandfather used to say when we sat on, often were there for Shabbos, he said, so, we just had a Suda mitzvah. Tell me, what did you enjoy, the Suda or the mitzvah? In other words, it all takes place turning the Suda Shabbos into an experience that is a 60th, a glimpse of schar, a tiny glimmer of perhaps what schar can be, the family around, the beautiful table, the food, the divrei Torah, the singing, all the things we do. But the avoda of turning that into a little bit of a sense of schar, real schar, the Suda of the Lev Yosef, takes place in our heads. It's all in our heads. And that is the definition of Vayishbos. Now, this is subtle. Putner explains that, of course, Hashem kept creating everything on the seventh day. In fact, when we say Hashem kept creating, let's just explain carefully. Everything Hashem created was with an amira. Hashem said something, and so it was. It instantly appeared. But Hashem doesn't speak either. So what we really mean is that Hashem willed it. There was a ratzon. Hashem willed that there should be a bria, and it was. So imagine if for a moment Hashem simply would stop willing the bria to be. Stop willing it, and so to speak. Stop having a ratzon that there should be a bria. And all of these endless billions and zillions of atoms and molecules that arrange themselves in all kinds of different ways that make tables and water and every single aspect of the creation. What if Hashem stopped willing it? So everything would instantly vanish. So the way Hashem wills it on the 6th day, Hashem continues to will it on the 7th day. Nothing changes. The Bria is constantly recreated, every moment, every second. But Vayishbos is something that takes place in our head. When we, taking advantage of the Neshama Yisera, which is designed and instilled upon us, instilled inside of us, strictly as a kli. Kli for what? Kli to experience the oneg, which is the schar, which is the tov. Okay? That's why we give an Neshama Yisera. There would be no way to turn our Shabbos experience into something spiritual and relate to it as schar without the Neshama Yisera. So the Neshama Yisera, we find it, we receive it on Erev Shabbos. What do we do with it? Obviously nothing that relates to the Neshama Yisera or appreciating the Oneg is really physical. So all of a sudden we now move to our mind. The Neshama Yisera is what allows our mind to take one further step than it normally can in not just knowing, but feeling and experiencing the difference between the oneg, which is Shabbos, the schar, the truth, the das, and all other types of pleasure and enjoyment and living and satisfaction. When the Neshama Yisera helps us distinguish between true satisfaction, which is the meal, the suda, the knowledge, the sense of being reunited with Hashem, the sense of calm and security and peace and bliss. We compare that type of experience, which is the Shabbos experience, and then we compare everything else. What happens? Instantly, everything else of the 6 days of the week pales in significance. It fades away. And it becomes as if it's barely in existence for us. It doesn't pull us. And the oneg of Shabbos, the schar of Shabbos, the das of Shabbos, takes a primary place and it wakes us up and it invigorates us. And when we create here an ikar and a tafil, knowing that the work of the 6 days, everything of the 6 days is tafil, it fades, it can't entice us, it doesn't give us anything lasting compared to Shabbos, which is ikar, which rises up in us as critical and important and the source of our life force. That distinction between the ikar and the tafel is called Hashem resting. It's as if Hashem no longer is busy with the 6 days because the experience of the seventh is so overwhelming compared to that. Hashem doesn't rest. He doesn't build and run up and down the stairs and work with the tools and then get tired and lay down. The only changes that take place are in our head. In our head, it's as if the work of the 6 days has come to an end. Because we have used our Neshama Yisera to create a Ikar Tafel, balance, and we see, to weigh them both, and we see what is Ikar, and we see what is Tafel, and for us, the 6 day work has come to an end. So what Hashem created on the seventh day, Vayishbos, that was a Bria, in a sense. He created Schar, that experience that the Neshama has of returning, and he created the Neshama Yisera, which is the only Kli Kibul a person has for a brief time each week to experience the Schar. Now we understand why the only thing that actually came to an end on the seventh day is the man. Because what Hashem made on the seventh day is Schar. Compared to the seventh day, everything else in our mind comes to an end. But we speak about the seventh day as something stopped. For Hashem, the only thing associated truly with the seventh day is lechem min hashamayim. It's the one physical, and it's food. Think about it, it's the food. It's associated with the das. Man is very associated with das, and we have a whole shiur on that and the meaning of man. In the Parsha series, Man and Das are intimately connected, and so when Hashem, there is something that actually stopped, a Bria that did come to an end on the seventh day, and that is the Man we received from Shemayim, Lechem and Hashemayim. It's the only indication that there is some type of a cessation of something on the seventh day from Hashem, in a sense, because the seventh day you would think would be the day to eat the Man. to receive the man. We did have the man, but we received it extra on Friday. Now we talk about Kavod Shabbos Friday. Why man, which is so associated with Shabbos, lechem min hashamayim, came, well, doubly on Friday and didn't fall at all on Shabbos. So all of the preparatory stages, everything we do in Hachana for Shabbos is part of Kavod Shabbos. In order to show Kavod for Shabbos, we work. We take special opportunities to do work, even though we're not necessarily used to doing work, or we don't need to do that work, we do it anyway. Anything that is worthy of honor, such as Oneg, we prepare for. We prepare for, and that's how we show it, Kavod. Kavod has many, many ramifications, but essentially we look forward to something and therefore we prepare for it. But associated also with preparing is always counting. Anything that relates to Oneg that's worth revering is worth preparing for, and one of the ways we show we're preparing is by counting. So what are some of the things we count towards? Well, Hayom Yom Rishon V'Shabbos. Shabbos is Oneg. Clearly the giving of the Torah, which is Atoho Reisa L'Das, a moment of Das in this world, everything we've spoken about, we had one moment, one glimpse of it here, the moment of Matan Torah, it was called Das. It's also called the Chuppah. That was also, we counted towards that, right? What about the reunion of a husband and a wife? Tanuk, Shabbos, the Chuppah of Har Sinai, we count towards that too. Everything that we prepare for, we count towards. Everything that's worthy of Oneg, that's called Oneg, that's called Schar, that's related to the next world, that's called Tov, we show our appreciation for it by counting towards it and by preparing for it. What we have left to speak about is the concept of tanug between a husband and a wife. And like we said, the Har Sinai was associated with this, and we count towards that. And das, va'adam yada eschava. Basically, when we are in a state of das, in the next world, because we don't receive it entirely here, what we're really, it's another way of saying, and this is Shabbos, and that's why this is also considered Tanug on Shabbos, that really, any pirud, any separation between Hashem, our Creator, and us, the creation, which carries within us a neshama, and on Shabbos, a neshama yisera, any separation between us, in a sense, is just a fantasy. Because when we say, Ein od milvado, there's nothing but Hashem, what do we mean by that? Well, there's us, there's radios and MP3 players, and there's food, and there's cars, so what do you mean, Ein od milvado? So the way the Balei Machshava, some see it is, that as we said, Hashem willed everything into existence, there is a rut zone, so what are we? We are all our molecules that make us, everything we call physical matter that we think is separate from Hashem. If we get philosophical, we are the willing, Hashem's constant willing that we exist. That's what we are. So do we really have a separate existence? If Hashem would stop willing us, we'd vanish. We're not that separated as we think. And when we finally realize, when the neshama returns, and it is reunited with its source, which is Hashem, its creation, and it is entirely spiritual and not physical. And we leave behind all the physical parts of us that were good for a while, and just the ruchnius part goes back to where it came from. Then we have das, but that means we know that there is only one. There's a chibur. There's only one harmonious whole between what used to be while we were alive, the ruchnius and the gashmius. But when we return, and we are in a state of das, there's no gashmius. We've reverted to our state of ruchani, of total spirituality, non-physical, and there is a chibur, a complete reunion between the ruchnius and the gashmius, and all the separation we thought we existed within was a fantasy, and we know that, we experience that, we know that intrinsically when we come to the next world. So Shabbos is not just the food, which is the das, But the tan of the oneg, the husband and wife, which is another form of das, is also part of the experience of two human beings here that were one, that were separated, and the objective of the separation is to return. What was originally automatic, now we must recapture through hard work, through effort. And so it is with this world. We were originally one. What happened before the Bria? So everything that we are was part of Hashem. And then there was some type of ratzon that it should exist in a seemingly separate way, but it's really not true. And the more a person in this world carries Shabbos with them, which means takes the concept that the Neshama Yisera receives on Shabbos. And don't forget, the Neshama Yisera has a critical job, Erev Shabbos, which is why double mun falls on Erev Shabbos. The Neshama Yisera must do the work of insisting, creating a reality that there is a Vayishbos. We create the Vayishbos. We create in our minds that everything else is nothing compared to the real true knowledge and the real true life, the real true living, which is Chaye Olam Haba. We create Vayishbos. If we receive the Neshama Yisera, and then we receive it Erev Shabbos, and we take its powers and we apply it to our minds and our emotions, it's not just the cold intellectual understanding, it becomes part of the emotion of the person, as we read that they used to prepare for Shabbos and dress up and go out to greet the Shabbos, and this is how Kabbalah Shabbos eventually evolved, and people felt differently and acted differently, and their face ain't a doma, there's no comparison between the Shechina on a person's face on Shabbos and not on Shabbos. It's a total change. It creates the Vayishbos. It creates the fact that Hashem is resting. It creates an Ikar versus a Tafel. Then a person with that Hachana, so the Hachana is not just physically for the food, it's Hachana in the mind too. Then the person moves into Shabbos, truly appreciates the Oneg of Shabbos, the meal, the Das, the experience of what that could be, the Tanuv. And then a person is meant to maintain that, obviously, through the rest of the week. And we really did not get to discussing Kedusha Shabbos, but just for one moment, not to leave it open-ended, the concept of Kadosh is Mufrash, the separation, right? What is not one step away from this world and all tangible things that we can appreciate with our senses. Mufrash is not here. It's not part of this world. It's not something we can feel or touch. Anything that is kadosh is mufrash, and it is not accessible with our five senses. So the kedusha of Shabbos reminds us that the entire day, what makes Shabbos kadosh, is about all the ways we disengage from the sheishes yom bereishis. Think about it. There's only one mitzvah aseh midoraisa on Shabbos that is associated with related to the meal, and that is Kiddush. And the other mitzvah aseh, which really relates to our head, and it also is applied to, we apply it to the malachos, is Shvisa, by Yishbos. Which means to say that all the things we do in honor of Shabbos, kavod, to prepare, and Oneg Shabbos, all the eating and the clothing and the fancy and the, you know, the tablecloth and all of that, if you really think about it, that's so that we understand what's happening on Shabbos. But Midoraisa, Shabbos is a day built in almost entirely, because Kiddush is just initiating all the Kedusha, the Yisurim of Shabbos. Shabbos is a day built almost entirely off the 39 malachas, all the things we don't do. If you were on a desert island and you didn't have the food and the clothing and the candles and all the beautiful things that are part of Kavod and Oneg Shabbos, you would not be Mechal Shabbos. And Kavod and Oneg are decreed by the Rabbanon. They're the Rabbanon to bring us to understand Shabbos. As long as you're not Mechal Shabbos with doing malacha. Not doing malacha, the 39 categories of forbidden work, they're all in the gather of Kedusha. All the things we don't do on Shabbos, mm-hmm. We disengage from this world. Shabbos is different. We feel different. We think different. We look different. We speak different. Not just because of the drabbanans of Kavod and Oneg, but primarily because of all the things we are not engaged in. If you think about the 39 melachos, it breaks down into food, clothing, and shelter, the pursuit of our basic physical needs for survival. We are not engaged in any of them. Because we are not engaged in those things, we are mufrash. All of a sudden, the day takes on a completely different aura. And so part of the Kedusha of Shabbos is first and foremost the disengagement from the physical, because Shabbos is a day that is ruchnius. When we disengage by the initiation of Shabbos from all the malacha, then we begin to take advantage of what the Rabbanan have taught us, have explained, and we get an entirely full picture of the day of Shabbos. Shabbos is just a glimpse into the Olam Ha'emes. Yom Shekulo Shabbos. That's all it is. And so all we can do here is speak about it. The neshamas that already are living in this world are all around us. We call it the future world, but it's really not future. It's the parallel world. And there are neshamas that are there, and they understand what we're speaking about. For them, it's not words. For them, it makes sense, and it's an experience. And those neshamas have returned, and they are at peace, and they are reunited, and they are calm, and everything makes sense. And for us, until that time, and it shouldn't, we don't hope that it's soon for anybody, we connect ourselves to that world by learning about it and by trying on Shabbos to make that kesher. And all of these mechanisms that Chazal and the Torah have put in place to make sure that we have the what we need to bring us into the mindset and to experience ultimately a taste of the future. We hope that the Torah we learned here should be an aliyah, further aliyah for the neshama of Devorah Bas Asher and Dina Asher Gidon and Dina, and all of us should merit to see first of all the Geula and eventually the Shabbos that comes to the whole world here, the Shabbos of the times of Mashiach. We should all be zoche in our days, b'mehera b'yameinu. My grandfather used to say, we say to Hashem, b'mehera b'yameinu. Not in your b'mehera, it could be a zillion years, but b'mehera b'yameinu. We don't have that much time. Okay, everyone. Have a good Shabbos.